This week we're talking about the continued presence of Todd Akin on the ballot. He had his chance last week to pull his name off the ballot, and he not only didn't do it, he launched a new aggressive effort. Joe, you were in St. Louis on the 25th, the day that was his last day to announce that he wasn't going to do this, and he seemed to be as defiant as ever and hit the road real quickly right after that. Tell us what kind of a mood he was in on what some people had said was drop-dead day for him if he was going to get out.
Well, actually, I mean, to be honest, I personally think, I mean, drop-dead day was really probably last Thursday.
I think that's right.
Before, because the ballots for the military by law had to be out by the 22nd, which was a Saturday. So that is a backdrop. He was defiant. I mean, pleasant. I mean, Todd Akin is always pleasant, but he was defiant. He said that his one job between now and November is to knock off Claire McCaskill. Now, he was this was a press event that he did where he was surrounded by, I would say, around 200 social conservatives, a few family members, but mainly a lot of social conservatives, some of whom I recognize. They were on kind of a tiered thing behind him, cheering him on for the press. And he was very firm what he's going to run on. He's going to be hitting those social issues hard. He talked about how he has an A from the NRA and she has an F. So I think he's going to be talking more on abortion, that kind of stuff. At least in rural Missouri, I think he's going to do it. I think he sees that his path to victory is to mobilize these conservatives who have been with him from the get-go. And he is convinced that that is, A, what he's supposed to be doing. He's a very religious man, and he believes that he won the primary when the odds said he wasn't supposed to do it because God had him win. And he believes that he should be staying in unless God tells him he needs to leave. And so he was extremely firm and said he was committed. And, of course, the audience was cheered him on. He didn't take any questions. And unlike Monday, when he was here with Newt Gingrich, and then they did take quite a few questions, and in fact, on the Beacon website, we have some video of some of the Q&A from yesterday. But today, he didn't take any questions, and he also didn't even take any before he got on the bus. Some of us hung around because we'd been indicated that he was going to take a few questions before he got on the bus, but he didn't. So they got on their unmarked brown charter bus, and they're off. And he's going to be on the bus for 4 days.
Is he going to wind up in Steve's category, Steve's territory, before he finishes this tour?
Yes. This is a statewide tour, and he will be, the rest of the first day, he planned on being in Sikeston and southern Missouri. And his plan calls for him to be then to go further west, and so he'll probably be in Steve's territory by the end of the week.
And that's exactly right, you know, Bob. And, you know, boy, what a gamble he is making here, because to have folks like Phyllis Schlafly sort of standing behind you as you make this announcement last week that he's staying in the race. This is one of the most conservative, well-known conservative women, not only in Missouri, but really the entire country, Bob. And Joe is absolutely on point here. This is where he's laying his bet that these folks will mobilize enough to get him across the finish line come November. I think that's just an absolutely enormous gamble at this point. But, given what he's been through, the turmoil and the tumult of the last month, this clearly is a place where he feels some comfort and can continue this very difficult campaign, with those folks by his side to boost him in terms of I'm sure what's been a very, very difficult few weeks here. But is this the kind of approach that's going to get you to 50 plus 1%? Of the vote in Missouri? I don't know. Some polls indicating he's behind by 6-8 points. Other polls suggest, more partisan polls suggest it's a little bit closer. But boy, he's really gambling here. And let there be absolutely no doubt now going forward, anyone who doubts that Todd Akin is still in this race for good probably thinks the moon is made of cheese, because we've crossed the Rubicon here. He's in this thing until the end, and we'll just see. We'll see where we wind up.
It would be a mistake, I suspect, for people who favor Claire McCaskill to think that he doesn't stand a chance.
I think that's absolutely right. You are beginning to see early signs that there will be something more of an effort here than just the campaign that Todd Akin himself will mount. He is out of money, short of money, and is really operating on a shoestring budget here. But signs coming now that other groups are beginning to show up and show some interest, the most prominent of which is Senator Jim DeMint of South Carolina, who has considerable financial resources at his disposal, now hinting that he may come in and help Todd Akin. Other groups also mobilizing. Joe points out that Missouri Senator Roy Blunt, now the first inklings that he's beginning to waver a little bit in his absolute, his declaration that Akin's not the right guy to run, that someone else should be the candidate. He now understands that Akin is going to be the candidate. Is he going to sit on the sidelines, really, or is he going to get in this race and help defeat Senator Claire McCaskill? But we've got 6 weeks to go here. Even with this help, Akin appears to be fighting from behind. And if he's going to mount this really stridently conservative kind of campaign, you wonder if that's going to be enough.
Joe?
Now, I covered him a couple days ago where he – I just happened. I was the only reporter there. Over the weekend, before the 25th deadline, he was the speaker on Saturday at a meeting, an annual meeting at Phyllis Schlafly's Eagle Forum Council, which is, as you know, the Eagle Forum was the main group that killed off the Equal Rights Amendment back in the 70s. But they meet annually, and they always have a number of very conservative speakers and others who come in. Well, Akin spoke Saturday at the lunch, and I had gone. I was the only reporter there. And just to give you a little bit of what he said, you know, he accused the Republican establishment of isolating him in a barn and throwing rocks at him, and he contended that they were selectively picking candidates who were not social conservatives because they don't want social conservatives in the Senate. And then he said, "I'm talking about Mitch McConnell and also Cornyn." Now, he's referring to Mitch McConnell, who's the Republican leader in the Senate, and John Cornyn, a Texas senator who heads the Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee. So he did not leave any doubt that he thought that they were off base. Well, you wondered, I don't know if they even heard that he had made these remarks, but if they did, you just wonder whether or not this was going to the type of language that would encourage them to let bygones be bygones. And he and Phyllis Schlafly both took out after Karl Rove big time. It was one of the most muscular speeches that I've ever heard Akin give, and he said that these Republican leaders are, quote, selectively picking people that we would say are not conservative, maybe economics conservatives, but certainly not social conservatives.
I think he's hoping that this kind of Todd Akin against the world, Todd Akin against the Republican establishment, will carry a little bit of populist appeal and might, you know, attract independent voters who are drawn by the notion of a crusading politician sort of fighting the man, if you will, in Washington, D.C. That might have some appeal to folks, and clearly that's where he's laying down some markers here. And but he's going to need, when he's been over here of late, you haven't sensed that sort of strong, vociferous kind of rhetoric out of him. It's been much more laid back than that. I think he's going to have to be more consistently combative, I guess, if he wants to carry that message a little further.
Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, McCaskill started a more aggressive TV ad campaign on the 25th where she uses the term legitimate rape, which is the term that got him in trouble when he said on TV a little over a month ago that women who are victims of, quote, legitimate rape, unquote, don't usually get pregnant because their bodies won't allow it. And that's what started all this. Well, she's got a big attack ad that started the same day that he was in the hotel and launching his bus campaign. This was a stronger attack ad than she has launched before. Now, whether or not that will attract, I mean, it's obviously aimed at young women, I think, in the middle. I mean, the swing voters. But it's also, though, will energize these social conservatives who have been with him from the get-go and who, frankly, agree with him on some of this stuff. And so I think you're going to see it's going to be an extremely divisive campaign. DeMint, I mean, there's been a controversy over whether or not Aiken agreed to ban congressional earmarks in exchange for aid from DeMint. And while McCaskill's campaign has been making a lot of this the last few days, I'm not sure if that resonates with the average voter. I don't think the average voter pays attention to that. They do pay attention to some of these comments, like legitimate rape. But again, the issue is, does that sway anybody, or is it just energize people on both sides who would be already have picked their candidate? It just might energize them more to get out there and vote.
Yeah, that was one of my questions with all of this discussion about earmarks. Is that too much inside baseball to really catch much wind from voters?
Well, I'm not sure that it is. I think there's a lot of public frustration with ideas like earmarks and how those things can, you know, build up the national budget deficit a little bit. But no, I think that issue has some currency with voters, and that's why you're seeing McCaskill play to it as much as she is.
I'm just not sure. I mean, I think it does play with the decision makers. It plays with some of the PACs, but also some of these activist groups on both sides. And it does, I think, play well with a certain level of voter who's engaged and who pays close attention to this stuff. I'm just not sure if it plays much to the elderly lady in rural Missouri who gardens and is concerned about Medicare. I think she's probably more. I think that person might be more swayable by McCaskill's attacks on Aiken because he has voted in favor of the Ryan plan to, in effect, turn Medicare into a voucher plan. I think that's the kind of stuff that might be more likely to sway voters than earmarks. Maybe I'm wrong.
McCaskill's been spending quite a bit of time in rural Missouri lately. Obviously, that's a place where the Republicans are quite strong. She's been talking about protecting post offices and supporting relief for farmers and other rural issues. Can she make much of a dent in rural Missouri?
You know, Bob, she's trying to make just enough of a dent that she doesn't repeat what happened to her back in 2004 when she ran for governor. You know, that year she focused heavily on the cities, largely let rural Missouri go, and she paid a huge price for it on election night when the returns came in, and she got beat by greater margins in outstate Missouri than she had hoped to do. And if not to belabor McCaskill history too much, but 2 years later in 2006, when she ran for the U.S. Senate for the first time, she kicked off her campaign not in either of the big cities. She lived in Kansas City. She now lives in St. Louis. She lived in Kansas City in the past. But she went home to Houston, Missouri, where her family is from, and kicked off her campaign there, a clear sign that she knew she had to do better in rural Missouri. So that's why you're seeing her talk about veterans issues and other issues that appeal to folks who live out there so much in this campaign. She's really focused on suburban Kansas City, suburban St. Louis, and very much outstate Missouri, because she knows she'll have the two big cities, but she's got to win enough outstate that she's not beaten there by Todd Aiken.
Yes, yes. I think he's absolutely right. I think I've mentioned this before. I call it the Mel Carnahan rule, because he's the one who first told me about this way back in the 1990s when you guys were infants. But I remember traveling with him in 1991 and 92, and he was doing a lot of stuff in rural Missouri, and he was explaining this to me. I was in the bus with him one time. And he said that a Democrat usually couldn't carry rural Missouri, but he said you need to get in the low 40s. He said you need to get 42%, 43%, 44%. And he said if you can get that and then you continue to get huge edges in the urban areas and split the suburbs, you can win. Now, the science has probably changed a little bit. I think that a Democrat arguably could maybe get 40% and win if they do well in the suburbs, if they actually carry the suburbs outside Kansas City and St. Louis. Don't just split it. But I mean, if you look at how McCaskill did it in 2006, she won because, I mean, her statewide vote margin of just over 50,000 votes was almost exactly her edge in St. Louis County, and which now has gone slightly more Democratic since then. But the cities, Kansas City and St. Louis, while they still give huge margins to the Democrats, there aren't as many people there. I mean, they're in the suburbs. So she's doing, like I said, what she can, and just what Steve said, to try to not lose too badly. And the question will be whether that will be enough. Newt Gingrich was contending when he was here for Aiken that it won't be enough because he contends that if Romney does well in the state, and some other analysts have said this too, that he just doesn't envision that many people voting for Romney and Claire McCaskill.